This is STEM Z Perspectives.
Hi, and welcome to STEM Z Podcast. Today we have Dina with us. Dina is a first-year chemistry student studying at the University of Oxford. Before starting her degree, she took A-levels in chemistry, physics, maths, and further maths, and developed a strong sense in how chemistry can be used to solve problems involving sustainability. She's also passionate about increasing the number of girls taking STEM subjects, and is involved in projects aiming to improve this. Outside of chemistry, Dina enjoys crocheting, her own clothes, reading, and trampolining. And I'm a high school student and a production executive at the Young Scientist Journal. I'm passionate about computer science and like to spend my time thinking with coding projects and learning about algorithms and machine learning theory. I'm also enthusiastic about language learning and can speak Japanese, Italian, and German. And I also play drums. Right then. Hi, Dina. So, I'd like to start by asking, congratulations, by the way, for getting into Oxford. I know it's been a while, but still, we all know it's a pretty prestigious school. But why Oxford, and what drew you to study chemistry in Oxford?
I think chemistry came first. I did my GCSEs, and at the same time, like, maybe I started my GCSEs, I started becoming, like, I would just always talk about chemistry, and I think, like, I became quite excited about the fact I could link what I was learning in class to the real world. Things like just being able, even though it's quite basic, being able to explain, oh, why water boils at relatively low temperature, why, you know, what is glass, what is the graphite in the pencils that I'm using. And I just got very excited about that, and I would sit down to dinner and always talk about it with my family. And then as I, like, so then I chose A-level chemistry, and that allowed me to, like, explore it more, like, at a higher level. I did projects, like, looking at how hydrogen can be used to, how we can improve hydrogen storage, because it's a potential fuel, as an alternative to fossil fuels and things like that, and constantly being able to use it, chemistry, to solve problems. I just found so exciting, and I still now will jump up and down about things when I get, you know, when I can just explain how they work. And it snowed this week, and I was like, I've been doing thermodynamics this term, and I was like, well, actually, I can explain this mathematically why, you know, next week when the temperature goes up to 10 degrees, it will definitely melt from a mathematical perspective. So that's kind of why I've chosen chemistry, why I'm studying chemistry now. And, you know, also its potential to solve problems in the future is quite exciting. So there's a future in chemistry as well. Why Oxford? It was put on my radar by school. So naturally, you know, I had the grades, and so I looked at it as an option. I think, like, obviously, for most people that apply to Oxford, obviously there's the prestigiousness of it. It's one of the top ranked universities in the world, and also for chemistry in the UK, it's like first or second. So there was that side of it, but also just going to the city and seeing it, it's a very pretty city, the buildings are lovely, and yeah, so I really like the city. I, like, could see myself studying there. The libraries got me very excited because they've got loads of libraries. It's one of a weird one because you apply, but the chance of getting in is, like, quite small, so you kind of have to keep it in perspective, but yeah, I was definitely, you know, excited about the idea of studying at such an academic institution. So, yeah.
Right. That's brilliant. So how's it going so far? How are your studies and what branch of chemistry are you focusing on?
So I've only done one term, which in Oxford is 8 weeks. We have, like, very short terms, but everything gets, like, packed in. So I did 80 lectures in 8 weeks. So that's 10 a week. This term, I've done lecture courses in the main branches of chemistry, so physical chemistry, inorganic and organic chemistry. So that's kind of what chemistry is split up into. And then I also did some courses in physics and some courses in maths. I mentioned before, like, I did a thermodynamics course, which was quite a big course, but also, like, inorganic chemistry, we were looking at, like, different structures of crystals and ionic lattices, which I found really interesting. And, like, organic chemistry, just looking at the fundamentals of it, because it's very different to what I learn at A level. So, yeah.
Right. So you also had to take the natural science courses.
Yeah, you do, because chemistry is quite, like, It's one of those sciences that sits in between all the other sciences and also maths. Because if you do physics, you end up like doing maths and physics, but chemistry relies on physics and maths. And then if you want to start applying chemistry, you know, I think later in the year I do some courses in like biochemistry. And obviously there's a whole degree in biochemistry you could do separately. So it's definitely a subject. I quite like the fact it sits in the middle, so it's quite varied as a subject as well.
Right. And you mentioned in your bio that you're interested in the sustainability side of chemistry. So what role do you think chemistry has in the problems of climate change and sustainability?
I mean, it's huge, really. I mean, so with, like, obviously everyone's heard about like, fossil fuels and how we need to move away from them. But in terms of, like, chemistry's role in that, obviously chemistry kind of got us into that mess in the first place, developing steam engines, using coal, things like that. But I also, like, I'm really hopeful that it's going to come up with the solutions to, like, move away from that. So developments in sustainable ways to, you know, produce energy. So even if that comes from physics, the materials and things that enable that to happen, come from chemistry. So for example, like the project that I did about hydrogen storage, we were looking at storing liquid hydrogen, and it has this huge problem where over time liquid hydrogen will heat up, and because it's heating up it will evaporate, and that causes pressure increases in the tank that it's stored in, and that's obviously not great if you're transporting it over a long period of time. And so our project looked at different materials and how different materials could be used to make better use of storing liquid hydrogen or gaseous hydrogen more efficiently, because gaseous hydrogen takes up loads of space. So we looked at things like metallic organic frameworks, metal hydrides, and I can't remember, there was a third one that we looked at as well. But yeah, so things like that, being able to develop those materials that then enable sustainable development is so important. And I guess the other side away from energy is also for you know, crude oil and plastics and materials like that. Can we make really good biodegradable plastics? That all comes back down to chemistry and polymer chemistry and things like that. So I guess it's so broad, like what I could get involved in and what people studying chemistry could get involved in.
Right. So yes, you're clearly passionate in chemistry, and it seems like you've demonstrated your passion, but still, it is pretty hard to get into Oxford. So how is the application process for you?
The chemistry application process is actually quite different. Well, it follows the same structure, but it's different to other science subjects because there is no entrance exam. So some subjects, so physics and maths, I know definitely have entrance exams. So I didn't have to do that. So I just sent off my personal statement, and then I heard back in November last year that I had an interview. I did my interviews, and then I heard back in January. But obviously behind the scenes of that, when you choose to apply, there's, you know, you have to write your personal statement, which is quite different to if you're applying to other universities in the UK. They say like your personal statement needs to be like mostly academic and also beyond the A-level curriculum. You can't be writing about things that you learn in school. You have to kind of push your knowledge to kind of show that, you know, you're both able and very like extremely passionate about your subject. So there was obviously that, and then you've got things like choosing your college, because Oxford is a collegiate system. So I chose to apply to Lady Margaret Hall, which is also where I study now. But there's over 30 different colleges at Oxford to pick from, so I know that can be quite important for some people. And then I got an offer, and I'm studying there now, so yeah.
How did you take that offer? Were you expecting it?
I wouldn't say I was expecting it. I was hopeful. I really wanted to study at Oxford. I think it's kind of hard to like know where you stand, especially with the interviews, because the interview questions are so varied. And, like, you know, sometimes you get questions that seem like they're really random, or, you know, the traditional, like, curveball Oxford questions. And sometimes some of my interview questions were very straightforward and, like, just normal chemistry. So it's so hard to judge. I think I was just, like, hopeful to get in. I wasn't expecting it, because in my mind I was like, I've got two first-choice university places until I heard back. So yeah, and I think afterwards is actually like the hardest time. Once I found it, the hardest time after I actually received the offer, because I hadn't sat my A levels yet. So I was preparing to sit these A levels, and people, you know, who didn't apply, or people, you know, my teachers were like, "Oh, you're doing the easy bit now. You're just sitting your A levels." And actually, it felt like everyone knew that I got into Oxford, and I had to get this really high offer, meet these really high grades, because I was asked. My offer was 2 A stars and an A. And I didn't sit my GCSEs because of COVID, so that was quite a stressful period, actually. And I quite enjoyed the application process, because it was, even though it was quite nerve-wracking, I got to, like, explore lots of chemistry when I was writing my personal statement, and, you know, doing the interview, that was, like, 50 minutes of talking to academics about chemistry. So I really enjoyed that from a chemistry perspective. It was just art that was quite stressful.
Right, and now that you're in Oxford, how's the typical day in the life of an Oxford chemistry student? So does studying really take a huge chunk of your day? Are you living that stereotypical Oxford lifestyle, or do you have free time?
I definitely have free time. I crochet a lot of the time in my free time, and I've made my own tops and things during term time. So you definitely, it's not all study, but chemistry is one of the courses with the highest number of contact hours. So I have, compared to, for example, humanities subjects, I have like 4 or 5 times the number of contact hours that they do in a week. A typical day for me will depend on whether I have labs or not. So for me, I have labs on a Monday and Tuesday. So every day, Monday to Friday, I have 2 lectures, 9 and 10 a.m. And then on a Monday and Tuesday, I go to the lab, and I'm in the lab on a bad day until 5 o'clock, on a good day until like 4, 3. It depends what practical we're doing. And then if I don't have labs, I will either have like a math class or a tutorial. So Oxford has like, you have like small group teaching on a specific subject. So you get set a piece of work that's normally like 10 to 15 hours, and it's like you have to learn some chemistry and then do some problems on it. So a tutorial is to go through that. And sometimes I also have like physics classes as well. So that's my typical kind of day. And then obviously you spend time in the library doing the work for the tutorials or your pre-labs or your post-labs as well.
I see. Sounds busy. So what's your favourite thing about the school?
My favourite thing about like my college, so I study at Lady Margaret Hall, is the fact that like it was the first women's college. It's now a mixed college. But there's so much history. Like, our library is huge because women weren't allowed to study in the main libraries in Oxford. So because of that, it's 3 floors. And I didn't, when you visit, you don't realise there's a floor below. And so I only knew about the top 2 floors. And then I turned up in October and someone was like, I was like, where are the chemistry books? And they were like, oh, they're downstairs. And I went downstairs and there was like 3 rows of like floor to ceiling chemistry books, which was a very exciting experience. But there's so much history. Even within the chemistry department, like, they have plaques outside some of the buildings, and they're like, oh, here's where, the research that went towards a blood glucose monitor for people with diabetes was developed here. Things like the structure of penicillin, I think, were, you know, the research for that was done by Dorothy Hodgkin at Oxford. And also the Nobel Prize in 2019 for lithium-ion batteries was also done in the inorganic department at Oxford. So there's a lot of history, which is quite exciting to hear about. And, you know, being able to be taught, you know, in the same place is just, I find very, like, cool.
And is there anything you wish you'd known before getting into Oxford?
I think in regards to my course, knowing how many contact hours I would have, how much time was spent in the lab, because you see on the website, they're like, well, what does a typical week look like? But you don't actually ever go through and add it up, because for me it adds up to like 25, 26 hours a week, which is a lot compared to other courses. And that's teaching time, and that doesn't include time to do work. I think that's the only thing I'd wish I'd known. Maybe also that whilst, like, not all the Oxford myths are completely true, Oxford does have a lot of quirky things about it that go on. And, like, people take, like, some of the traditions very seriously. So I think I knew about that, but I didn't, like... Again, you don't really know what to expect until you get there.
Interesting. And what's being a woman in a competitive STEM field like in Oxford?
I would say, actually, compared to my A-levels, it's been slightly easier. When I did my A-levels, I was the only girl in my further maths class, and... in year 12, it was me and, I think, 7 boys. And then in year 13, it was me and 4 boys. But, so that was quite, I found that quite a difficult environment, particularly with math, being a big maths. And, you know, I don't think it was ever intentional. Like, it was quite a competitive atmosphere, and that can be quite difficult. And I felt, you know, at times you could feel, like, quite excluded because I was, like, the only girl. I don't think it was intentional, but people don't realise how their actions can impact others. And that was quite, you know, my physics class, there was 2 girls and a lot of boys. And even in chemistry, it was a better split, but it still, there was definitely, like, noticeably more boys in my class. Now being Oxford, I had a look at the statistics this morning. In my year, I think it's actually about 40% female. So whilst it's not 50-50, it's a lot less noticeable than being the only girl and 7 boys. But yeah, so, I mean, it's not been so competitive yet because, again, we're only 8 weeks in, no one's sat any exams. But yeah, I think it's definitely better, like, in a good way, like, a lot better than I thought it was going to be. And when I was looking at what university course to apply to, I also looked at, like, engineering. And in the end, I concluded I didn't want to do engineering because I didn't want to do so much physics. But I also, you look at the statistics for the number of girls that take engineering, I was like, so I want to do another 4 years, like it has been when I was doing A-levels. And it wasn't the only reason that I didn't choose engineering, but it was definitely something that was going through my mind. So, yeah.
Also, you'd mentioned earlier that you were involved in some projects about gender diversity in STEM. What drives you to do these projects outside of your studies, and could you elaborate on them?
I think just you see on the module, like, of like people being enthusiastic about STEM, I think often is a mad scientist and that kind of thing, and very often, like, it's science and maths at high levels are associated with men. When I got my, when we were talking about, like, just kind of the period before I got my interview, you know, people would always refer to their interviewers as being male, even though there was no reason that you would have male be interviewed by, you know, necessarily a man. So, like, that image, I think, like, I really want to change that image, and I think, you know, more powerful than big famous scientists that we know are actually the people that you do know doing science. And, you know, just being able to, you know, I think there's something so exciting about being able to talk to other people your age or who are a couple of years older or younger than you about the science that you're doing and being excited about it. And again, getting other people to jump up and down about science. So that kind of makes me quite, like, very passionate about it, very excited about it. You know, being able to just have those conversations with people and learn from other people as well. Yeah, and also just, I think it's frustrating when you see, like, going from GCSE to A-level, I saw so many girls who were so able and got top grades in their GCSE maths course just doing A-level maths. You know, when, you know, they had the potential to do further maths, and obviously it's down to an individual whether you choose further maths or not, but that option was never, like, spoken to them about. And that, you know, the narrative about further maths is, oh, it's such a challenging A-level, it's so much time, but it is doable. And I don't think anyone was having those positive conversations with girls about why you should take further maths and the benefits of it. So things like that, I think, were just slipping under the radar, and I definitely really want to change that. So, yeah, to make those numbers more equal.
That's great. So is your college and overall Oxford supportive for people from different backgrounds? And are your classes, projects, groups, etc. diverse?
So in terms of my college, Lady Margaret Hall is quite a diverse college. In terms of at my college, so there's, like, I think there's between 160 and 200 people studying chemistry in my year. And but in my college, there's six of us, and we're five girls and one boy. So again, complete opposite. So and my college is like, you know, quite diverse in terms of people from different backgrounds, ethnicities, state school versus private school. Other colleges I've heard, I'm not like, I don't know any statistics or anything, but I've heard can, you know, lean more towards private school, kind of more having more people who went to private school. But again, that doesn't mean those colleges aren't as good or like aren't as welcoming. It's just historic numbers. And for some reason, like Lady Margaret Hall has ended up as is a quite a diverse college. My course is quite, I would say, quite diverse, but obviously it can't really account for experiences that individuals have. In terms of our like lecturers, you know, I think the one thing that shocked me was this term was that I think I've had like 12 lecture courses and 11 of them have been male lecturers, and I've only had one female lecturer this term, which was quite a shock because, again, you don't think about, you think about physics as being, you know, a subject that has a particular problem with just white men being at the top of it, but in chemistry, I from the people, you know, from the statistics of students actually doing it, it's quite a diverse subject, but I didn't realise that that issue kind of fed into the lecturers. But yeah, so, I mean, I think next time we have more female lecturers, but yeah, so some places it is diverse and some places it's not diverse, and it's definitely varied as you move throughout Oxford from course to course to college to college. So I would say, like, there's definitely space for improvement, yeah.
I see, all right. But you wouldn't say it's male-dominated anyway, would you? Or?
I would say, I don't know, I think the culture can sometimes be quite male-dominated. Because again, you know, you might have 50-50 split, but if how the culture is independent of statistics. So, you know, I think, especially like, I think sometimes, like, we have formals, and I think sometimes the formals, the culture within them could be quite male dominated, how the conversations happen, you know, that can be quite difficult to navigate sometimes. You know, especially, you know, women are socialised far more to not speak about, you know, their achievements as much, or to, you know, this is not everyone, but are on the side of, like, keeping quiet. And I think, you know, in a formal setting, when you're sat down having dinner with your tutors, you know, and you hear some people, like, bragging about the things that they've done, that can be quite difficult to kind of hold your ground and actually be able to speak about the things that you've done. So yeah, I mean, it can be male-dominated. I think in the side of the lecturers and the tutors, it is more male-dominated. But again, it's quite hopeful because the students, you know, if we're 40-60 now, we hopefully will be closer to 50-50 in 5-10 years' time. And obviously that's only going to feed into the lecturers and the people that are then teaching chemistry in the future.
Mm-hmm. Right. It certainly must help that people like you are working on such gender diversity projects. Right then, thank you so much for being here. Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
No.
Right. This was the STEMZ podcast, and thank you for coming, Dina.
Thank you.
Right.